Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Air Sport, the home of rugby in Ireland. Visit airsport.ie.
Yes, indeed. So a very satisfactory opening weekend in the Heineken Champions Cup, as you know at this stage. Bonus point win for Leinster, two massive points in Sandy Park for Munster, and a win for Ulster against Leicester in Belfast. This weekend then, we have Munster, Gloucester at Thomond Park. We have Ulster in Paris against Racing, and Leinster will travel to Toulouse on Sunday. And incidentally, we do have the Munster game live here and Off the Ball on Saturday. And Connacht obviously are away to Sale in the Challenge Cup as well. Keith Wood is with us, Matt Williams is with us. Gents, you're both very welcome. Matt, I wonder, we're all insular, we're all guilty of that, but I wonder, are even the French press acknowledging the brilliance of Leinster's statement opener this weekend?
They are, yeah. Certainly suggesting mid-Olympic, just having a look today, and while the French teams and possible selections are taking, and their poor performance is really taking the headlines, I think everyone is suggesting that there were a number of extraordinary performances, as in results on the weekend, but Leinster were just head and shoulders above the entire field in class. And certainly that's been stated here by more than just the press, by a couple of ex-rugby guys I know pretty well I bumped into, and they were just saying we're an extraordinary game. They were how far ahead of a great club like Wasps that has such a great tradition in the Cup, how far above them they were. And it's not an exaggeration. It was a pretty amazing game. I think it's one of the most dominant pool games I've ever seen from Leinster, if not the most dominant. I'm trying to think of another one. I talked with Victor Costello yesterday, and we were both trying to come up with ones where we thought that the club had been more dominant. Really, that was just a superb display.
Sometimes, Keith, when various players do various interviews in a short space of time, you get a feel for what's being said behind the scenes, and too many of them have used the phrase, we are attacking the tournament, we are not defending champions. We are changing that mindset. We're not defending champions, we're attacking this tournament. And at various points, different players have said that. I can't think they're all just dreaming up that same phrase. So that gave us a real insight into how Leinster are going to go about this season.
No, and I will say that for a lot of sports people, the last thing they hear is the first thing they'll say too, you know. And I would have been guilty of that myself often in the past.
No, you're an original. You're an original thinker, Keith.
Yeah. I'm a comfortable plagiarist is what I am. But the nature of how they played, they were a bit kind of slow in the first half to get going. And once they got going, the level of attention to detail, which we talk about all the time, but attention to detail when you're going at a million miles an hour is very different. So it was a joy to watch. It was a joy to watch the movement of some of the players, the lines, the angles, the skills, the handling, the attitude. I thought Wasps gave up halfway through the second half. The fact of suffering a yellow card and not having enough players in the field. It was the ruthless nature of how Leinster went after that was the total shift, game shift, where suddenly, yeah, you're down, but there's tries going in left, right and centre. It makes life very difficult if you're not overly happy about being away from home and you're looking down the barrel of a big defeat, and it became a big defeat. It wasn't about Wasps. I think Wasps did kind of give up the ghost, which is pretty poor on the first week of the tournament, but there was a knife. They were gutted with a knife by Leinster. They were never give a sucker and even break is a line that we've often used. That was perfectly shown there. Let's not just beat them. Let's try and put them out of the competition once and for all, because Wasps have an ability to be very dangerous. We didn't see it on Friday. We may not see it again. They were beaten down and bedraggled by the time they finished.
Do you suspect in any way that Wasps attitude in the second half is a consequence of the demands of the Premiership? We had Jordan Murphy talking after the Ulster game, Keith, and he was saying, you know, credit to Ulster, but I'd prefer to be coaching on this side of the water because I have, you know, Youngs compared to Rory Best, and, you know, he's played 8 games in a row. Rory's come in off one game kind of thing. And I'm sure it's particularly true in Wasps' case when they're looking at Leinster and realise they're probably not going to get out of the pool anyway. But when the demands of the Premiership are so great and the squads are getting thinner and thinner with rising wages and the salary cap combining, in a terrible way for Premiership clubs. Do you suspect that's part of the reason why a club like Wasps, third in the Premiership, maybe did down tools a little bit?
I don't know. I think they're a little bit more tired than our guys are without a shadow of a doubt. And I think Jordan is a young coach, a young head coach. He wants to say the right things. He has to fight his corner. I'm not saying I don't believe what he's saying, but I think in many respects, I think he'd quite like to not be under as constant humdrum pressure that the Premiership is. The Premiership, I played in it for 8 seasons. It's attritional. Unless you're riding very high in the tournament, it is hard work every single week. And there's a backdrop to that is the prospective $300 million purchase of a minority stake in the Premiership, which may happen, and how will that adjust the figures? But I do know that every time that the Premiership clubs have put up, have got more money for the wage cap or have got additional funds through TV, they've spent it very quickly. And I think the level of pressure that's in over there doesn't fully fit with what it needs for their international game either. So they have other fights and other arguments to have. I just thought Wasps looked outgunned, lost, and almost confused by the end, which is very tough. Very tough for them. They're a proud club. They're a club that play very well, but they didn't know which way was up against Leicester. So I think it's as much to do with that as opposed to saving yourself for the next game. I just thought it was a bit early to, it kind of ran away from them an awful lot at the end.
Yeah, it sure did. James Lowe popped up with 2 tries, 184 metres made, which by the way is 53 metres more than any other player across the competition in round one. So Johnny Sexton was talking mad. He was saying that James Lowe has brought things from the Chiefs and he's taught us how they operated and we've adopted a few bits from what the Chiefs have done. And you throw in Felipe Contepomi's fingerprints and then you take the fact that Stuart Lancaster is really starting to, you know, stamp his authority all over how Leinster do things. And it's a fairly lethal concoction. You get the sense they're still innovating, don't you? You get the sense they're still developing, Leinster.
Well, they have to grow. I think it's the really fascinating part of the first few weeks of the season about Leinster is just that. How do you get better than what they did last year? You know, they won both the competitions that they were in by a considerable margin, and they were the best team by a considerable margin. Now, how do you keep growing? That's the challenge. New Zealand rugby has that sorted pretty well. You look at an organisation like the Crusaders. They keep challenging themselves in certain areas each year. They bring in new staff. That's why Ronan Agara got his opportunity down there, because that's what they look for. They look for a new voice, a new idea, 5%, 10% here and there. And Leinster's just those, and I know they are cliches and Keith is right. They've probably got it written up on a board somewhere. We're going to attack this competition. We're not defending it. But it's a great mindset. Now, if you put that in another couple of areas, like you said, you bring in Felipe, and the players learn a lot more off their peers than they do off their coaches. That's why having great players in a club is so important. They are the number one educators in a club, are the players. The coaches bring stuff and they facilitate. But, you put a young 10 around Johnny Sexton, once he starts talking to him after about 3 years, he'll start learning. But you learn a lot off your peers. So Felipe and Lowe had a great game. But, you know, if your wingers are scoring tries, the guys inside you are doing some really good things. The set play that off the line out was just a beautiful little set play. Johnny Sexton through the legs, which just creates space. You know, those type of passes and of course, you know, Furlong, like, wow, what can you say? You know, I'm not just saying this. Keith Wood used to play a brand of rugby as a hooker that was just different to everyone else with the skills and so on. I'm not saying it because Woody's there, but it's true. And we're just seeing Furlong, just every other prop will tell you they can do that, but they can't, but this guy can. And all those little aspects are coming in. And we said it on the show last week, for me, the mindset of Leinster is what will either win them another competition because they're good enough or hold them back and they'll fail. And right now, in the early parts of the year, their mindset and their determination is just where it needs to be.
It's interesting. I'm reading Mike Ross's book at the moment, who's going to be in studio next week. It's a really good read. And he was talking about his first ever meeting with Joe Schmidt. And this came after the 2010 semi-final against Toulouse, which I guess we'll kind of touch on in part in just a moment. But you remember the Leinster scrum was fairly decimated in that 2010 semi-final. Toulouse went on to win the competition. So Mike Ross sits down in front of Joe Schmidt, hadn't had a great time under Cheka, and Joe said, well, so, you know, what are you going to bring to the party here? And Mike Ross had rehearsed the line, and it was, I'm the best scrummager you have. I'm going to lock down that scrum. And he thought, well, you know, QED, conversation over. And Schmidt said, yeah, but what else are you going to do for me? And Mike Ross stared blankly back, you know, and thought, what the hell is going on? And suddenly we see where Tadhg Furlong is a few years later, Keith.
Yeah, look, I like Tadhg. He's a cracking fella. He has, and for all the supporters out there that have met him, and those who haven't met him, he has a little smirk on his face all the time. He is pretty much living the dream. He loves every single bit of it. And I think you can see it. He's a bloody bear. I mean, I was a front row forward. I feel pretty much like a Peter Stringer when I stand beside him. He's huge. Yeah. He's a bear of a man. But it's when you see the little swivel of the hips when he's sprinting on the outside on Friday, which is pretty amazing. He's scrummaging incredibly well. He is... he has an air and an aura about him that is, I think, pretty much world class. Mm. And it's funny, you can meet people that have that, but he's young. There's an awful lot more to come from him. There's something exciting about that idea that this is a guy that hasn't got near his peak yet. And that's one thing I will say that we're seeing a little bit more of. Mm. Our guy's been given the chance early enough, being managed properly. I think Leinster have done an incredible job with him, actually. And I think we're seeing them mature earlier.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the injury rate at the moment is very impressive too. On Toulouse, Matt, then I guess you might be watching a bit more of them than the rest of us. So in vague terms, we're all aware of the last couple of years. They haven't been so kind. So Toulouse's last Heineken Cup win is 2010. Their last top 14 win is 2012. And then last year, for the first time in the tournament's history, we didn't have Toulouse in the Heineken Champions Cup, or the Champions Cup as it was. So they regrouped and finished third last year in the top 14 to get back in here. And they're obviously enjoying the Freddie Burns boost from an away win last week. So where are Toulouse? They seem to be on an upward curve, but a low enough base they're coming from.
Fair summation, Joe. They hit some hard times. I went to watch them play, I think it was 3 years ago, or was it 2 seasons ago, and they actually played against Bernard Jackman's Grenoble. I was up at the Stade Wallen there up in Toulouse, and it was a horrid, horrid game of rugby. And I sat there thinking of the great Toulouse teams that I was privileged to coach against, and the wonderful players that had worn that jersey, and the creativity and the skill levels that used to leave us in awe back in the beginning of the 21st century there. And they had fallen, and fallen mightily. And they'd gone down the similar path. They'd started just bringing in foreigners, and they were pretty much not second raters, but they were past their prime. And they'd lost their philosophy, and when I say that they had a style of play that was just bloody beautiful to watch, and it was almost impossible to stop when they got it right. Their offloading and the skill level and the pace they had, and they dominated the French national side. Now, in Midi Olympic today, they're suggesting that only Maxime Médard might make the bench of the French national side from the squad that they picked. Now, that's not an official squad, it's just what the selectors think. But even saying that there's only one Toulousian player possibly making the national squad is quite extraordinary. Mm. They are on the improve. I'll give you an example. They've got young Zach Holmes, who's an Australian kid, lovely young man. He's playing 10 for them. Now, Zach is a great guy. He's only the second guy to play for the Wallabies from Western Australia. Came to the Waratahs, went back over to the Western Force, got one or two caps. I think it's only one cap for the Wallabies. Might be two or three, but that's not the point. Look, he's a journeyman. He's a great guy, and I love the fact that he's backed himself. He's gone to Toulouse, first La Rochelle, then Toulouse. But he's not a genius. They've got Kano coming towards the end,
and he's out actually as well. He's been that side end's come through, so he's gone.
So you know they've got a little winger there that Chris and Colby put some great food on the other day.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mesmo, they've got guys there that are good. They'll be hard, and at home they're a tough outfit, and this won't be easy. But they're not the Toulouse of the past. The only thing I will say about Toulouse, Europe means a lot to them.
Yeah.
It's not like the other clubs. Like, I actually felt a lot of the French clubs didn't try. I'm not going to say didn't try. It just doesn't mean that much to them. Their focus is on the top 14, and it's such a tough competition, very much like Keith said, the English competition. And you've got relegation, and there's not many points around, and some of the clubs are hanging in there, and you don't know what's going on internally within the club.
Yeah.
But the Heineken Cup is a grail for Toulouse. So it's a bigger, much, much bigger test for Leinster. It's almost a sellout Sunday afternoon, and Toulouse will not die easy. They're not like some of these other clubs, like as Woody said, what Wasps put up the white flag there at the 65-minute mark. This mob won't do that.
Yeah.
So they're better, but they're not going to be the best opposition that Leinster will meet on their journey through.
Yeah, John Fogarty was talking today and he was recalling the 2010 semi-final and he was saying, I have nightmares of that game. Whenever you go over there, it's an attack on the senses. Toulouse hasn't changed. There is still an atmosphere and it's good to hear it might be a sellout. Leo Cullen was making the point, Keith, he said, I was watching them recently and the pitch over there is very heavy, so it's going to be a very different game for us. But I mean, Leinster have the tools to win any way you want, really.
They have, provided they don't have any level of complacency whatsoever, you know. And if we take a look at any of our Irish teams going over to the south of France with an idea that they just have to go down there and win, wins in France are still very, very difficult. Mm. I fully expect Leinster to do it, but they have to do it in that fashion where nothing is taken for granted, because if you let any of the French teams, and some of the old things still fall in, if you let them get a chance at home and they get their confidence up, they can play to a point and play very well. They are getting better. They are one of the teams that believes in this tournament almost above all else.
Mm.
But they are a long way off those days. But I just wanted to touch on that one point, Kaino's tackle, which was... a lot of the commentators were saying, well, it's actually not even a penalty. It is a penalty. You know, if you tackle straight up, standing up, you make the connection with your head and their head. That, you know, if it is up that high, if you are making a contact standing up straight, it's the reason they've tried to change some of the laws in terms of the high tackle is to get that tackle out of the game so that there isn't a head-on-head, because that is one of the issues. It's the tackler getting hit in the head that causes a much, not in this instance, but it can cause a lot. So I know he hit him with his shoulder to the head, but it is one of those things. They're trying to get the tackle down to what the tackle used to be, which was tackling around the waist. They haven't said that. They haven't brought it down.
Yeah.
But that stand-up tackle, they are trying to get rid of.
Yeah, well, he's got a 5-week ban, so he'll think twice the next time. And you don't want to be too cynical, but it was notable that Jamie Roberts is coming back at the weekend from he was out for 4 weeks with a fractured cheekbone. I mean, I'm sure Kaino isn't weighing all that up. That's a bit too much.
A five-week ban
is big, though, isn't it?
It is, but I don't believe it is in that cynical sense.
No, I wouldn't either.
I think it's part of, actually, an awful lot of it came from Cheka's choke tackle back in the day, and that idea of it moving on, that when somebody's in, somebody tackles low, the next guy comes in.
Mm.
But the progression to that then is to try and hit high and hit almost with your chest to their chest. And people say it's a change of the game. The game has changed to that being part of it. I think we're better off getting rid of it if we can.
I want to move on to Munster. Just before I do, very quickly, just to mention, to mark your card if you're looking on with an Irish interest on Sunday, that one of the two Toulouse head coaches, Reggie Son, excuse my pronunciation. So he was the forwards coach at Bordeaux. He's a former player at Toulouse. And a couple of years ago, he had burnout and he decided, I need to get away from the whole thing. So across 2016 and 2017, he left the professional game behind. He spent 2 years coaching Bandon Rugby Club in County Cork and at Bandon Grammar School as well. And he said at the time, I'm a West Cork man now. I like to meet new people, new experiences. I've become a Cork man. This is not a joke. I love the country. I connect with the people here, the tradition, the GAA. I love the Guinness. Toulouse was the only club that could change my mind, the only one that could take me back to France. So if you see Reggie on the sideline, he's a fairly interesting character.
Well, I can tell you, I can tell you that, Joe, that the impact he had, he has pretty much changed around Bandon in terms of the Munster Junior and Senior Cup.
Right.
They have They have done unbelievably well over the last number of years. They've got their systems in place, and an awful lot of it apparently was due to Reggie.
Well, good man Reggie, so he's on the sideline for Toulouse at the moment. We are here with thanks to Air Sport, the home of rugby in Ireland. If we're talking Munster, Gloucester, then invariably of a certain vintage, one game stands out.
They've got the drive going. 5 metres, 4 metres, 3, 2, 1. Can the ref give it? Now it's come out. Staunton wriggling his way to the post and right on the post. There are three there. It must be a try. Yes, it is. A second try for John Kelly. Now it's all there for the taking as Gloucester pick themselves up from underneath their own posts.
Well, I'd like to be anywhere else, Jim, but in Ron Nogara's shoes now. He now has the opportunity to put Munster through.
I knew it was an important kick, but I didn't know that it was a one-point differential kick.
It's away, and it's on target, and the flags are up, and Munster have got the lead. They want it. 27 points the difference now. Munster 33, Gloucester 6. Gloucester haven't scored in the second half.
We've now crossed the 42-minute mark, and once again, Stringer at the base of everything, waiting. And O'Gara is there. He'll kick it out of play. It's out of play. All eyes on the ref this time. I think he wants to play on the ref. Looking at his watch, he said 42 minutes. Stop, and he has. It's over. And Munster have done the impossible. Who could have believed this against a side who are going so well like Gloucester? That is probably the best performance Munster have ever put up.
Yeah, amazing stuff. 33 points to 6, the miracle match in 03. And then camera cuts to red-faced George Hook, and he's talking about this is Fatima and Lourdes and Knock, and the lame will come here and walk and all this kind of stuff. And it kind of went some way, Keith, to cementing the tradition about Munster and the relationship with this tournament as well.
I think it did. And I back in the few years beforehand, getting to the final, beating Toulouse in Bordeaux, losing the final, having the link and the bond between the supporters and the team after that final in 2000 in Twickenham, to it not happening for them for a while. And then suddenly, every match that they had that went away seemed to add something else to it. But it's when you're the real underdog, when you need something that is pretty extraordinary that has to be achieved, and Munster were doing it. And in that game in particular, they delivered on exactly what they needed to do. Yeah. And I remember that game, and I remember having conversations with a couple of Gloucester guys beforehand, with Tom Walkinshaw, who was the owner, I think, at the time. They just didn't have any doubt that they were going to go over and win the game. You know, and it's very much like this conversation we're having about Leinster going down to Toulouse. Gloucester were in a really good vein of form, but Munster had a really good history in the tournament and had built their house on the fact that this is what they wanted to go and do and win and achieve. And there was a very different reaction to it. And, you know, Munster went about that game. There was huge passion. You can hear Jim Sherwin's commentary there, that there's great passion in him, and you can hear the noise in the background. So there was huge passion in the supporters. There was a fair amount of passion on the team, but the team were incredibly pragmatic, and they went about doing it pretty much a try in each 20 minutes, you know. And it is extraordinary, and it is one of those great things to happen. And do you know what? It would probably have annoyed me if Munster didn't then go on a couple of years later and win the Heineken Cup, that if that was the sort of extent of it.
Yeah.
But actually, it all feeds into that journey that was for 06 and 08, that these are the things that are possible. And the flag still flies in Thomond Park about impossible dreams and stuff like that. So
yeah, it sure does. Matty, we saw Munster come away from Sandy Park with two massive points, and almost in a small kind of tentative way, in so much as you can in round one of a competition, almost kind of take control a little bit of the pool. Obviously, Exeter will have to come to Thomond in round six. Am I wrong to kind of look at that result and then look at Gloucester, who admittedly are fourth in the Premiership, but look at Gloucester coming to Munster and think, well, this one should be okay. This is 4 points in the bank.
Well, I think if I take those one at a time, Joe, I think it's we may very well be sitting or talking in January at the end of the pool stages and look back at those 2 points as the most important points Munster get all year.
Yeah.
To get 2 points out of that game on that day and those conditions was pretty extraordinary. And there's a double favour to this if I skip out a bit. I didn't think, if Munster didn't get points out of that pool and therefore exit a finish on top, I wasn't sure that Munster would have enough points finishing second to be a second team that gets out of their pool, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Now, I thought it would be Toulon. And then the other extraordinary thing that happened for only the second time in their history is Toulon were beaten at home by Newcastle, who were last in the Premiership.
Mm.
So the 2 points, if you like, if I say something rather opposite, the 2 points are much more value than the 2 points. It is that was a massive point, especially to keep the last few seconds. They're up to 22 phases. Exeter smashing on Munster's line, and they showed the one thing that I've been very critical of them is defence away from home. They defended their heart out. Duncan Williams, chase back tackle was won them at, you know, stopped a certain try. It was just one of those moments of individual bravery that turned the game.
Mm.
And you come back to Woody's point about the mindset and the belief. They chose to run into the wind. Now that tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
we're from Munster and we're tough and we're going to take you on.
Mm.
And it was just really good for the club and really. It wasn't exciting rugby, as in what Leinster were doing, throwing the ball around, but it was dramatic and it was gritty and it was tough. And it shows, and that's what I was talking about, Toulouse. What does this competition mean to the people from Munster? It means a lot, and the team reflected that. And Toulouse may do the same, but the 2 points, wow, that was a massive, massive 2 points.
Yeah, and Gloucester coming, they've been 4 years out of the competition. They beat Cast in the opening weekend in King's Homer.
Yeah, look, I just don't think the Premiership teams are really at the pace of the competition. And Keith said something there which I really believe, that Gloucester came down and said, how can we lose? We can't lose. We had Leicester saying the same thing. Oh, how did we lose this thing? They find it really hard to believe. The English clubs find it really hard to believe they can go across the Irish Sea or bring an Irish team in and that somehow they'll be superior. And it's a psychological problem that English clubs have had since the competition started. There are exceptions along the way, especially when you get to the playoff stages. But so many times I've seen English clubs play Irish clubs and they just can't believe that the Irish clubs turn up with the intensity and the ferocity that they do.
Mm.
And I don't think this is a great Gloucester side. You know, it's an okay Gloucester side. They're fourth in the Premiership. They're behind Wasps and in front of Leicester. So if we put them in that bracket, that's about where they are. I think they will struggle big time down in Thurman. I think the Munster guys will really get the bit between their teeth after picking up those 2 points away from home and realise at the end of the first two games, they could be sitting on top of the pool.
Yeah.
If Munster get a bonus point, now you're talking.
Well, I wonder
now you're really talking.
I wonder, Keith, if that's the thing to target. So you might answer that question. And also, I've heard Luke Fitzgerald in particular and Shane Horgan as well in his piece in the Sunday Times be pretty withering of Danny Cipriani's defence. I mean, we all see the mercurial talent in the passes, but actually really, really, really don't trust this guy defensively. Where are you and Cipriani and what Munster are going to do this week?
On Cipriani, I think he's a talent. I think he has the ability to do things most other players haven't. I think he's moved around a lot of clubs at different times that never really holds up well for a player. Defensively, I think he can be quite flaky. But equally, well, I don't know that they protect him enough. And if you have a guy who doesn't tackle a huge amount or isn't a particularly good defender, you have to mind him, whatever way that is. And we've all played with players who weren't great defenders, and we've all played against players who weren't. It isn't quite as easy to expose it if there's a very good system built around it.
Yeah.
So, I think he's got a really good capacity and well able to play. I loved the game last week. And watching in Sandy Park, how how Munster went about it was a little bit old school, and I know Matt said it wasn't really attractive. It was bloody gorgeous. It was a great game to watch. It's very exciting. You could see how difficult it was. It was the wind was crazy, but yeah. Munster went about it really, really well. But I thought it was a great game. I really like Exeter. I think they are they're a phenomenal club with the resources that they have and how they go about every element of it. There's something to be cherished there in the game of rugby that they have. And to be honest, it ended up honours even and was probably about right. But I just wanted to reiterate one point that that Maddie said. I played with Quinns in Thomond Park against Munster.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that the week prior to going, to try and get my team to understand what it was going to be like, I tried, I failed. Mm. I mean, it's one of the things that really annoys me because, you know, when you're from somewhere and you go back to play them, you want to be strutting your stuff and you want to be delivering in every way and you want your team to fully turn up. We didn't.
Right.
We just couldn't get it into this team. There were no, in their view, there were no stars in that Munster team when we were going over to play it. But there were a Munster team that knew how to win and knew how to win in the Heineken Cup.
Yeah, we're streaming live on Facebook here as well, on YouTube and Periscope, and there's Heineken Star Common contenders coming in. And this one, I think, is worth a mention. I was going to ask it myself, so I'll put it to you, Maddie, then, as the coach in the room. Will Munster have changed their line-out calls much, considering Gerben Grobler is central to the Gloucester pack? I remember Dunnock Ryan coming back to haunt Munster last season when they went to Racing, is a comment in. Van Graan addressed this during the week, said they were certainly conscious of the fact that Grobler would be familiar with their calls.
Oh, they have to, and they will.
Okay.
Just so people know, Keith knows this, clubs have different sets of line-outs that they would rotate through because you get analysed. You can't use the same line-out every week because the opposition, the analysis of people's play is just way too deep. So they'd have a series of line-outs that they could use, and they would have each year or parts of the year, people change their calls because, believe it or not, there are anoraks around that would sit and listen to the audio and figure out the line-out calls.
Yeah.
And I know because every club does it and you try and work it out. So, look, I don't think there's that something as simple as that will be overlooked by Coach Van Graan. The other side of that is that, you know, from Gloucester, you've got two Irishmen there sitting on in the coaching staff. You know, Dave Humphries is the director of rugby and old friend of mine, Dinger, Johnny Bell, is the defensive coach there. So I'm pretty certain they'll be doing what Keith tried to do at Harlequins, and they'll be trying to do it to their club. But you know, again, I'm just not sure that'll get through enough to overcome what Munster will bring to the game on Saturday.
Keith, what was your go-to plan when you were on the pitch and you realised the code had been cracked and they had you rumbled in the line-out?
Well, I can tell you that by the time we finished, I can tell you Munster's lineouts because I went back and played a couple of matches before the World Cup in 2003, was the most complicated set of lineouts of all time, and I have to say it. The Enigma code would have been easier decrypted than Munster. It actually didn't make any sense. But equally well, an awful lot of them are to do with movement. And Paul O'Connell would have been, towards the end of my career, would have been very integral to the changing of it from being calls to being a reaction to movements that go on. So I think you can chop and change difference. I've played games and matches where we knew the opposition's calls. Life is an awful lot easier. You know, you can't leave that happen. Mm. So it could be an easy change.
Mm.
And it could also be a set that we know that against Gloucester, we have 7 or 8 different types of lineouts that we're going to use in certain situations. We're going to use those from a pool of maybe 300 lineouts. We're going to use 10 or 15 today.
Right.
This is the call that fits into it.
Okay.
So there can be a structure. You can change it fairly easily. It then goes down to the players under pressure. Which call are they hearing? Are they hearing last week's calls or this week's calls? And equally well, I've played with players who couldn't figure the difference. So, and it can happen. And under pressure, you need to make them very simple. You don't need to think whether that, no. You just want to hear it and know what it is.
Yeah. Very quickly, you're on commentary, by the way, alongside Liam Todd and Conor Morris at Cameron First. Are you, I mean, am I being desperately greedy here to ask about a bonus point? Is that the aim for Munster?
I don't think you're being desperately greedy. And I think, you know, when we were talking down in university, the concert hall last week in Limerick, we were saying that there's no Munster team is going over to Exeter and looking for a losing bonus point. First and foremost, Munster have to win. You know, it's absolutely imperative that they win at home.
Yeah.
They need to make certain they get the win, and then they go after the bonus point.
Yeah.
You know, so they can't be chasing bonus points, and we know that from times past in this competition. You have to do your job first, which is to win the game.
Yeah. Connacht will be away to Sale in the Challenge Cup. Chris Ashton is actually going to make his return in that game, and then Ulster will be in Paris against Racing, obviously on the 4G surface. I mean, the big takeaways from the game against Leicester, Matt, was Michael Lowry was quite brilliant for a 20-year-old, playing out of position as well, and it was just probably good for Ulster to get a win. We had Rory O'Connor in here with Eddie O'Sullivan on Monday, and both sort of felt ultimately it was two average enough teams, and they both had worries about Ulster in the pack away to Racing, not to mention the likes of Zeebo and Joe Rococo out the back as well. So, I mean, this is going to be no fun for Ulster.
No, and Ulster can't do their rain dance and get Ravenhill on a cold, wet, blustery night in this beautiful new stadium that Racing have. It's a very different kettle of fish, and I think the England, again, not saying this, but Ulster have a history of really springing surprises on teams on cold, wet days or nights at Ravenhill. And I think they did that last week. They were brave, they were courageous, they tackled everything that moved, and they deserved to win. I think it's a very, very different scenario to what they're going to face this week on a new artificial surface, and a team that is much more in love with the competition than a Leicester team that have lost the coach earlier in the year and are really struggling. Racing aren't playing that well, I have to say. They're you know, the bottom of the mid-table. They're about, I think from memory, about sixth. But they have not been playing extraordinary rugby. Now, they have had a number of tough oppositions. In other words, the way the draw of the competition, they haven't played a lot of the lower teams. But they certainly haven't been the team that they were last year. But I think they'll still have too much for Ulster, who I agree, they're just so skinny in that forward pack, especially that front five. I can't see them holding on or getting that sort of upset against a Racing club that will be targeting again their position in Europe.
Yeah, that seems to be the general sense. And then very quickly, Zeebo, away from the stuff that pops up on our phone and the Twitter feed where we see the strike rate and the tries, in general play, how's he doing?
Oh, mate, I think, you know, I'm a fan of Simon's. I wish he'd turn his social media off for a while and play some better rugby. I've been a little disappointed with him over here, and I don't know if he's settled completely. He certainly hasn't been, in my opinion, from what I've seen. I haven't watched every single game, but he hasn't set the world on fire in the games I've watched, and he hasn't been playing as well as I know he can. And I just think he might want to stop trying to be the social media star of Paris and turn it off and strap his boots on and let his on-field performance do some talking, because he's a good player.
Yeah, and, scoring tries is the thing, but it's general play you're talking about.
Yeah, look, I think he can be on the end of the line and catch a ball and put it over the line. And, you know, I'm not suggesting James Lowe was ordinary, but a lot of the time the work is done inside you to score those tries. I just think he's got a lot more in him.
Okay.
A lot more in him than he's presenting at the moment.
Okay, well, we'll see how he goes at the weekend. Lads, we'll leave it there. Keith, thanks a million. Matt Williams, thanks very much.
Brilliant.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball with Air Sport. Watch every Munster and Leinster game only on the Air Sport pack. Visit airsport.ie.